Fiona Ritchie here with an hour of the music of Solace. My guests are band members Seamus Egan and Winifred Horan. Welcome to the Thistle and Shamrock. Well, I've met up with Seamus Egan and Wyn Horan from Solace. We've met up in Scotland, and it's great to welcome you here. So first of all, tell us why you're here.
Thanks, Fiona. It's great to see you again after all these years. But we're delighted to be in Scotland, and we're over playing at Dougie MacLean's Festival, which we're really thrilled because we had a great time with Dougie last year out in Boston, and he invited us to come over, and he kept his promise. And so... yeah.
That's beautiful here. We're just the drive in from the airport. So, and the rain has been nice. So, getting the full dose.
Now, I shouldn't really say this because it will make you self-conscious and you'll start listening to yourself, which, you know, is probably in the rules of interviewing would be one of the first things not to do. But I'm tempted just to say that your accent kind of tells us a lot about the history of Solace, because it's a coming together of people from the United States, from Ireland, and the musical mix that's all brought together. So maybe tell us a bit about your background, Seamus, and then a wee bit about how that's fed into Solace.
Well, I was born in Philadelphia in the States, and then shortly after that, my family moved back to Ireland, to Mayo, where my father is from. My mother's parents are all from Donegal. So we were there for maybe just over 10 years, and then the family moved back to Philadelphia, and then eventually I found myself in New York and met up with Wyn, and at that time, that would have been 89, 90. Irish music in New York at the time was really kind of going full force. I mean, it still is, but there was a different sort of energy to it at that point, and there was just a lot of music going around. People were, there seemed to be a different sort of excitement to it. And John Doyle, he had just moved to New York from Dublin. I don't know, it was just sort of like a big stew of people that just started playing together. And the band really started haphazardly. John and myself, like I said, we were playing a lot together. And Wayne at the time was playing with Cherish the Ladies. The festival had called and asked for, you know, put something together. And Wayne and myself had never really played together. And so John and myself were talking. We were like, well, it'd be great to do something with Wayne. And then we're like, well, it'd be nice to have an accordion. And so we called up John Williams out in Chicago. And so we did a few things like that, and it was good fun, and we really enjoyed it. And we said, well, if we were to do this seriously, we were all kind of ready to do something different. And we'd been hearing about this girl who had just moved to New York. People were just saying, oh, this is an amazing singer. But she was kind of elusive. No one really ever actually saw her. She was this sort of voice in the wind. And so there was a place in New York called the Eagle Tavern. Everyone would play there at one point or another. So Wynne and myself were playing there one night, and someone came up at halftime and said that Karen Casey was in the audience. And we hadn't met Karen at all. She got up in the second half and sang a couple of songs with us. It turned out she lived on the same block that Wynne and myself lived in New York. She was like two doors down from us the whole time that we were trying to find her. So once we met up with Karen, we decided we'd be a group at that point.
Alleluia, Gauna, 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 G
I was born actually in the city, in Manhattan, but Mom and Dad, who are from Ireland, like Shay's parents, moved us out to Queens, out to Rockaway Beach. But I do remember very well, like when we were youngsters, Dad driving us up to the Bronx, which was sort of the hub, like, you know, back in the 70s, and up for dancing lessons and music lessons. And back then it wasn't such a bad thing to have the kids in the pub, and Dad would take us up to sessions Friday and Saturday nights. I had gone to school in Boston, and when I moved back after college to New York, like Seamus was saying, I just got sucked back into the whole Irish scene again, because it was thriving, like, you know, sessions every night in as many pubs on as many street corners, like, you'd always hear the session. So, yeah, just ended up back in New York and running into Seamus and sort of wanted to start something different.
that coming together, as you mentioned, with John Doyle and Karen and John Williams and yourselves, that's over 10 years ago now, because you recently celebrated with a reunion extravaganza.
Yeah, it was the hardest thing about it was just trying to get everyone to be able to be in one place for the couple of days. I think it took about 6 months just to find the couple of days, and then it was all over in 2 days. We just did the one concert. We didn't have the resources to do a couple of concerts to just to be safe. Mm. It was all in.
And that was Solus Reunion. You brought together, your current band at the time with people who'd played in the band and people who'd played on albums. And although you only had the one night to share it with a live audience, you made it into a DVD so people can get in on the act and sort of see what that was all about. But that was an amazing thing to be able to do, and sort of to take that moment to stop and reflect on where you'd come with the music and have that reunion, a big party.
I suppose in some ways sort of an indulgent thing to do for ourselves, because when people left the band and stuff, we kind of lost touch for a while, and then over the years sort of reconnected in different ways. So it was interesting when everyone kind of came back, and because we hadn't played any of those songs or tunes with the different lineups, and particularly going back to the starting lineup. It was great the way it all kind of came back together so fast, and it just seemed like we'd played the night before someplace. That's the way it felt.
Free.
I found it to be highly emotional as well. I mean, because obviously we had spent so much time together with these people, and you know, no matter what anyone says, it's always really difficult when a band member decides to leave for whatever reason. Like, I just, it's like a breakup, you know? There's an awkward period, and it was really amazing because not many bands actually can do it. Like, get back together and, enjoy, you know, it. enjoy the fun that we had on the road when we were together on the road. Reminisce about that, laugh about some of the silly things, silly choices we may have made, you know? And as we were all getting older, like, you know, it was just amazing. It was more than just about the music, actually, because we were all pretty... And still are, like...
I think the getting older part is the great equalizer.
yeah, definitely.
Things
the getting older.
Important it, 10 years ago, I don't think
yeah,
it's so important
or
anymore.
Like even just talking about, oh, you know, my eyesight's going, or when back in the day, back when we first started, like we were invincible. Like, you know what I mean? We could go out and party with the best of them, and 6 weeks on the road didn't even affect us. Whereas now it's like,
six
you know,
hours
6 hours. Everyone's like, you know, oh, are you going up to bed? Oh yeah, I'll see you in the morning. Whereas it would be like, are you still up, you know? So, but it was highly emotional and really, really powerful, because even though, like Shay said, we hadn't played that material or those songs that were really, they really just touched all of us. I know it. Like, everyone got, you know, even the guys, like, a little teary-eyed, definitely.
When Hannah built this cage, I saw the blueprint on the tape. But I was too young to run. She lured me from my play into her clandestine domain to tend her illicit garden. Black, black soul. This takes her toll, and from her veil of black, with all the mirrors at her back, she called me into her guarded empire. I treaded soft and lightly, fear trembling. Snows in my bones, I dream of the white sea. Black, black soul, and Alice takes her toll. Child of sin, black Alice wins. Roared and jeered. I knew that no one leaves from here. Her fervent anger don't spare anything. In the frenzy, I dug my trenches. She confiscated my defenses with all the forces. She lured me from my place. tender illicit garden. Black soul and Anastasia.
Black Annis from Reunion, A Decade of Solace, the 10th anniversary celebration concert in Philadelphia, brought together all band members, past and present, at the time of that memorable evening in 2006. Thanks for joining me, Seamus Egan and Winifred Horan, as we talk about their band Solace and enjoy lots of their music, about which you'll find complete details in our online playlist at thistleradio.com. More to come now on your radio, so stay with me, Seamus and Win. This is NPR. Fiona Ritchie still with you, and more of the music of Solace.
Has been quite a regular part of the history of Solace, and sometimes when we see bands that have worked together really, really well at the beginning, they encounter a change in their lineup. It rocks them and it shifts their sound in a way that you feel that they've had to adjust and maybe not fully recovered from a loss, and maybe see it as a loss. With Solace, it always has struck me that change may have come for different reasons that we're not privy to, but that you've almost kind of embraced it as an opportunity to evolve in some way.
Once the changes started to occur, I think if someone new was coming into the band, whether or not that person would try and clone what the person, you know, the person who'd left, try to clone that style, and you know, I think we thought that it would be better overall that new person should have their personality, and then that gets, you know, worked into the band. And I think allowing that to happen, let someone be themselves, I think it's probably why we've been able to just sort of adjust and just become a new thing almost every time. But I think bands are hard things to keep together. I mean, they're a very, you know, they're volatile entities at the best of times, and you know, and things change. So, you know, I think it's good that in some ways that life changes get reflected in the music. You know, and it's, and I mean, and we play Irish music, and Irish music has evolved always. I mean, what was traditional 50 years ago was different than what was 50 years before that. And so, I mean, it's for us, I think it just seems like a natural thing, just to let it be what it is at that time, and it's 5 years from now, you know, it'll be different again. The core of whatever we did was always going to have that sort of Irish blood going through it. That would be one thing we wouldn't be able to get rid of. It was always going to be there. Not that, I mean, we didn't want to get rid of it, but it didn't need to be turned up, I don't think. So I think, whether or not we were trying songs outside the tradition or writing things outside, tunes and stuff outside the tradition, there was always going to be that sort of pulse that was always Irish anyway. So I think it just allowed us not to focus on that and not to be too concerned with it. And if we were to have anything that was sort of a guide, was just that if it was musical and if it was something that we might enjoy listening to. I don't think we ever sat down in any time we ever rehearsed or put something together thinking it was like, oh, well, that doesn't sound traditional enough or whatever. It was never anything we really thought about, because I think we just took it so for granted that it was always going to be there anyway.
never even planned on being a band, never mind doing an album. But then to have, like, if it's okay to say, like, Shay, to get the summonses or the reports, and that's not Irish, or that's not traditional, or, you know,
it makes you think about things we never thought about. We never would have thought that something would have been not traditional. It was like, well,
you didn't know that you were supposed to be reporting to anybody.
Yeah. Or that there was a certain speed limit, you know, that she could play a reel at. Like, you know, I mean, I know for myself, the faster the better sometimes. Like, I want to get up and kick around and dance, like, and it's great to have them slow. But, geez, we got so many speeding tickets along the way. We really did, didn't we? Not once ever, even preparing for an album or preparing for a concert or whatever we'd be doing, Fiona, did we ever say, it has to be like this time, or it has to sound like this, or it has to be this sort of a, you know, continuity is important on an album, but nothing was ever thrown away because, like Shay said, that it was maybe not traditional enough, or, you know.
Well, I think also your approach, you know, your progressive kind of an open-minded approach to music is reflected in some of the places you've performed. You've performed at all the big folk and Irish Celtic festivals, but you've also been invited to sort of chamber music festivals or Telluride Bluegrass Festival and other festivals. So it shows that your attitude, your appetite for your own music and your kind of outward-looking approach has been recognised and been embraced as well.
Because sometimes you think about, well, maybe it's sort of boxed into this area and it's kept over in this room, and it's nice once in a while that you realise that it can expand to a slightly bigger room. We were down in Merlefest this past spring, and that, you know, you hear about Merlefest for forever, you know, and it's an amazing festival, and, you know, so we had a chance to play there this past spring, and it was just incredible, you know. It's just and just to be a part of that experience is, you know, it's nice.
Darkest sky.
Well, your live performance life is obviously giving you all these wonderful experiences. What's it like right now, though, to be a recording artist? It seems to me that the music industry, the recorded music industry, is changing, has been changing almost as much as the broadcasting industry has, or probably hand in hand with, in fact, through technology and through how people access music now, how people expect to be able to obtain music. I just wonder what it's like right now to be making music and to be selling music.
Well, I'll let Shay talk about that, sort of the recording side of things and record companies and all that. I would love to talk about, sort of in conjunction with that, Fiona, is like the best thing about being in the band is the live, like being on the road is hard and all that, but for me it's the concerts and playing live with the band, and getting to make an album is just a bonus, and like it's a completely different process. But the whole technical side of it, the way it's changed over the years, Seamus can speak to that.
As technology has progressed, it's actually easier to make albums now, but it's way more difficult to sell them. So, you know, to get people actually to buy it, it's a really interesting time, because there's so many different ideas now that people have about how music gets out there, and there's so many different ways, like you said, YouTube and...
If you had your business skills really together, which, I'll be quite honest, we don't at all, and never have, and I don't actually see us getting it together either, Seamus, but you really could just do everything yourself.
There is a sense of a freedom where you think you can record something in your house that's as every bit as good a quality as some where you'd have to go to a studio, and and you can put it out there. You can make it and send it out into the world like that, in an instant. And there's none of this packaging, and there's something appealing to that.
It's just that the expectations sometimes get way out of hand as well. They expect music to be delivered to them in all these ways and forget that, you know, there has to be some economy there for people, you know, to continue to do it.
That's the balance that needs to be. It won't be possible to continue. You couldn't afford to do it. I mean, at the end of the day, this is how we make our livelihood. So if everything just kind of goes up and is grabbed and taken away, then it'll stop.
Shane.
laughter seem like two very good reasons to keep making music, and that's the title of your current album. And
honest to God, Fiona, we wouldn't still be doing it if we didn't love it. Being out on the road and making your living as a working musician, I'm starting to realize it's tough, like, but it is.
I know. See, I knew there was laughter.
The guys laugh at me, but no, we are pretty lucky to be able to play your fiddle to make a living. Like, it's sort of ridiculous in a way, like, because it doesn't feel like work, but do you know, you still love it, don't you, Shay? Shay is not shaking his head. He does,
no.
Too.
No, I mean, we're very fortunate to be able to still have the opportunity to do this and with the band, and yeah, it's I think as long as we're enjoying it, we'll kind of keep going at it.
Thanks for taking the time to catch us up with the music of Solus.
Thanks, Fiona.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks to Wynne Horan and Seamus Egan, who took some time to chat with me at the Athol Palace Hotel, Pitlochry, where they were appearing at the Perthshire Amber Festival. Our radio programme comes to you from Scotland. It's a Thistle Radio production, and I'm Fiona Ritchie. Our programme playlists are updated each week and archived at thistleradio.com. Check until you see this week's one, Solus. And if you'd like to write for one, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to the Thistle and Shamrock, P.O. Box 518, Matthews, North Carolina, 28106. More from Reunion, A Decade of Solus, with thanks again to Wynne Horan and Seamus Egan. Looking forward to your company next week. Thistle and Shamrock is a service mark of Fiona Ritchie and is made possible in part by the Compass Records Group. Compass Records, Green Linnet and Mulligan Records, dedicated to the support of Celtic music, past, present and future. www.compassrecordsgroup.com. Support for NPR comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. This is NPR, National Public Radio.